Welcome to Gay Mystery Podcast, featuring interviews with renowned LGBTQ authors and up-and-coming talent of mystery, suspense, and thriller novels. I'm your host, Brad Shreve, and Justine Adamick is here with her weekly recommendation. I'm excited about my interview today with Mark Zubro, but before, as we always begin, we have Justine with her weekly recommendation. What you got for us, Justine?
Well, I've got a great new book, just was released on the 17th of July by Jordan L. Hawk. Jordan has written the marvelous Wyborn and Griffith series. And if you don't want spoilers for that first series, you should stop right now and race ahead to the interview, because his new series is a spinoff and it necessarily contains spoilers for the end of that series. Both series are set in the town of Widdershins, which is a fictional town in Massachusetts outside Boston. Sounds like it's probably close to the Salem area of town. And as you might expect, there is a fair amount of supernatural stuff going on. And in the Wyborn and Griffith series, Wyborn was a member of one of the oldest families in town, and he worked at the museum. And then Griffin was a former Pinkerton's agent who showed up. And they get together and they discover all sorts of magical things. The world is a fantasy world. And Widdershins itself, which is what carries over to the new series, is a town that sits on one of the arcane lines of the earth. And there's a permanent maelstrom under the ground. Now, in the first part of the current series, the book is called Unhallowed. And it starts out with, you know, description of the characters and what's going on. And what has happened is that the end of the world was supposed to happen in 1902. There was a great big battle, and it did not happen. As you can imagine, Wyborn and Griffin were on the winning side, and they were the good guys.
I noticed it didn't happen.
It didn't happen. So now we've got somebody coming to town who believes himself to be a monster, with some hint he might have been on the losing side. And he's there to get a job in the library, which is attached to the museum, as a bookbinder. The other main character is an archivist at the museum who was supposed to be the bookbinder, but he refused the task when his mother wanted him to follow in her footsteps, so he's become an archivist. Be that as it may. So now we've got this museum. We've got this guy who shows up for a bookbinder, and it turns out he's really there to steal a document, map the library. The town itself is an interesting town, because not only is it set on these arcane lines, but it accepts same-sex relationships. They don't talk about them much, but they also don't talk about the vagaries of heterosexual relationships, because the women in the town marry more than once. So that Sebastian Rath, the museum archivist's sister, has three husbands. These husbands are all out to sea. And one comes in for a while and is happy as, you know, being part of the family. All the kids are treated as his kids, although he's only the biological father of a couple of them. And then he goes out, and then the next one rolls into town with his ship. And so she's got three husbands who kind of rotate through, and they're all perfectly happy with the arrangement.
Sounds like a perfect setup to me.
It certainly is. And the rest of the time, the town doesn't talk bad about them. So there you got it. Perfect life, and nobody hassles you for it.
What year is the story?
The story is set in 1910.
So they were very progressive.
Very progressive. And it's also the year of Halley's Comet. And so whatever this map is needed for is something that's supposed to happen when the Earth crosses through the tail of the comet. And there were a variety of other news reports of people who think crazy things and cults that are waiting for the end of the world and those sorts of things. So Halley's Comet adds this extra mystical conspiracy theory edge to the book, but there is indeed real magic. However, what really drives this book home, and I think you would like a lot, Brad, is this library. This is a huge library. because it needs to be, because it's got all the books on all the mystical arts and on the history of the town. But it's also set up in a very strange way. It is a labyrinth, and it's very easy to get lost. There are multiple levels and dead-end passages, and there are rooms that aren't even shaped as regular rooms. There are kind of extra walls, and they're in rhomboid fashion. And then one of the rooms is known as a sheep room, and then another is known as a bat room with real bats keeping guard over the books and eating all the insects in the place.
What a fun library to get lost in.
It really is. It really is. And the librarians all know that there's more to the world than meets the eye. And they've also got some of the more magical books under lock and key.
Yeah, this sounds very much a magical fantasy storyline.
It is. But it's a true mystery, because Bookbinder is there to steal a map and to give to this bad guy who's making some threat in the beginning. You only know he's making some threat towards the Bookbinder's brother. And so, you know, there's some kind of heist coming and there's a gang of bad guys, and the whole thing is a mystery set within a fantastical world. And I give this a fun recommendation, Brad.
Fun. Have we had a fun recommendation before?
Oh, we've had lots of fun recommendations.
Okay,
before.
I can never remember what's on your list.
Well, it's on your list.
Well, that's true. I haven't.
They're all go on your TBR list, Brad. And I think that you will really like this one, because Sebastian and Vesper. Vesper Rune is the bookbinder. Sebastian is the one with the sister who works as a museum archivist. They get together, although it's not very much a romance. It's not the, you know, gee, I'm falling in love with you. They kind of get together. If it goes like the Wyborn and Griffin series goes, now that they're together, they're going to go through the rest of the books together as a sort of crime-fighting duo. Those are really my favorite. My favorite series where main characters are a couple and they respect each other, but you don't have the "I'm falling in love," "Oh my God, I distrust you." You know, they just work off each other quite well.
I like that too.
So this one gets a fun recommendation.
And do you have anything from Requeer Tales this week?
We're coming out today with Sunday Best by Edward O. Phillips. Not quite a mystery, although it's got a mystery in it. It's really more of a misadventure. Chadwick is a Montreal lawyer who has gotten to a fair amount of trouble, and he gets himself into a bit of a pickle accidentally this time. Actually, I think, they're pretty much all accidental. And he gets himself out of it. It's a Canadian series, and it also gets a fun recommendation if I was recommending those.
And just to make everything clear, when Justine says today, it's the day the show releases, which is July 28th, 2020.
That's right. That is the release date of Sunday Best. I think I calculated it correctly.
Yes, you did. That's the day the show re-airs.
Sounds great.
Okay. We'll talk to you next week, Justine.
Sounds good. Thanks.
We're sponsored by Requeered Tales, preserving our LGBTQ literary heritage one book at a time. Check them out at requeeredtales.com. Mark Zubrow is the author of 37 novels and 8 short stories. His book, A Simple Suburban Murder, won the Lambda Literary Award for Best Gay Mystery Men's Mysteries. 8 others of his books have been nominated. One of the keys in Zubrow's mysteries is you do not want to be a person who is racist, sexist, homophobic, or a school administrator. If you are any of those, it is likely you are a corpse, or at the very least, it can be fairly well guaranteed that bad things will happen to you by the end. He taught 8th graders English and reading for 34 years. He was president of the teachers' union in his district from 1985 until 2006, when he retired. He now spends his time reading, writing, napping, and eating chocolate. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you.
So, how does it feel to be a legend?
pretty ordinary. Most days, if I'm napping, eating chocolate, there's nothing too much legendary about that.
Well, the reason I bring that up is anytime I look up online gay authors that you must read, your name is always there. So you must have been doing something right, or must be doing something right.
Thank you. Yes.
Question, your mystery novel from 1989, A Simple Suburban Murder, started it all. It was your first book and won you a Lammy at the second annual Lambda Literary Awards. I guess that must have been exciting given it was your first novel.
Yes, it was wonderful. It made my year.
You tell us about that experience.
I couldn't make it to the ceremony in Anaheim, and my parents, my older and younger brother and their wives, lived in California. So they all went. And I was still teaching school, and you couldn't take a personal day the last week of school. So it was a Friday night, and we were playing poker with the other teachers, is what I was actually doing. And my mom called and let me know the good news. So it was really exciting. They said, my dad gave the acceptance speech, and he said simply, "We're very proud of our son." And the crowd went wild, because that's very important, especially back in 89. That was something very significant, 89, 90.
Yeah.
So it was really cool.
In your A Simple Suburban Murder, it's one of your Tom and Scott mysteries, correct?
Correct.
Now, they are a happy gay couple. That's something you didn't see much in writing in 1989.
No, when I sat down to write the book, I knew from the beginning they were going to be a happy gay couple, because there weren't any. Joseph Hansen's guy was depressed, and at that time in his books, I believe, not coupled. And Richard Stevenson, his guy was getting coupled. I said, no, from the beginning, these guys are going to be out, they're going to be proud, and they're going to be a couple and a happy couple. Certainly, we did not see that on television or in the movies, and we still don't see it very much in television or the movies. You know, the romantic comedy with the two gay men or lesbians or any of the LGBTQ community, we still don't see it very much. And that's, I think, is still a distinct lack. And we can be the Jack character on Will and Grace and be the stereotype gay character. That's more okay than I like.
It's better, but a lot of times there's still the funny sidekick.
Yes, yes. I believe it was the gentleman from Friends, the big computer nerd. I don't know why I can't remember his name at this moment. After they closed the show, he was on one of the talk shows, and the talk show host said, "Well, you know, so many gay characters." And the Friends guy said, "Give me," I'm not quoting exactly now, "give me romantic gay characters that work out happily. Maybe there are a few people, critics in New York, who are above it all, gay critics in New York, lesbian critics in New York, who are above it all, but I'll take it." And that's absolutely true. In the movie A Beautiful Thing, out about 10, 15 years ago now, the two young men realize they're in love. And then there's one scene 3/4 of the way through the movie, and they're in the park, and it's romantic, and the music is swelling, and they're twirling each other around and dancing. And I said, "That's the first time I've seen us do that. And I want that. I want to see that, because it's important." And it's true. There are happy gay couples. We know that. But getting us up on the screen, or getting us past whatever barriers in somebody's head, I enjoyed it. I loved it. I thought it was a great movie.
Well, you were ahead of your time.
Well, we got to start somewhere, I guess.
Agreed. So you've written 37 novels, and most of those have been adult mysteries, such as your Tom and Scott series and your Paul Turner series. In recent years, though, it seems you've put more of a focus on writing young adult novels. What brought about that decision?
The few gay young adult novels that are out there, I've enjoyed. There's just not enough of them. And again, I wanted a happy couple, because even in many of the young adults novels that are out there now, we still don't get our happy ending. And I'm afraid I am a sucker for a happy ending. Plus, I thought up the idea came to me for the first one. There's two series, the Shane series, Shane and Corey. And it just, for example, the idea for the lightest one. So I woke up middle of the night, got some orange juice from the refrigerator, and I stood there. I was watching the weather on TV. And the plot for the third book in the series just came to me. It was just so clear. It was just, I rarely know how a book ends when I start. I know how it ends. And that's been the case with most of those young adult novels. They're just clear, because I think young adults in our community need a voice, need to see themselves, need what all I did not have. And when I was a teenager back in the 60s. And so, and luckily I had plots come to me that worked, that made sense. So I'm working currently on the sixth one in that series. Third in that series, sixth young adult book.
Well, I think that's awesome. Now, Forever, which is part of the Shane and Corey mysteries, it was your latest book. It came out in March. Is that correct?
Yes.
Tell us about Shane and Corey.
Well, Shane is a woodcarver, very quiet. The first book was gentle, because that's what he wants to be now, and that's what he wants to be as an adult. His parents are awful. I imagined, what would it be like to be the gay child of lunatic right-wing morons? And so their children must be like something. So I said, okay, my guy wants to be gentle as an adult. And he has a couple role models. He goes to wood carving classes at our art center. And then Corey is the problem child in school. He's the kind, when you look at him, you'd say, oh, he's the one that would shoot up a school. Well, of course, they meet, they fall in love. I don't think I'm giving too much away to say that. Mm-hmm. And the third one, there is, in fact, a school shooting. And I'm not giving too much away. This is just the very opening few pages. They, in fact, have an alibi. It's a perfect alibi. They were making out in the restroom of the school library when all the shooting started. So they can alibi each other, except Corey is very closeted. His parent is a big mucky-muck lawyer in town. Both his dad and stepmom are. And like I said, Shane's parents are lunatics. So he's fairly closeted too. So they've got to face, among many, many things, to prove they're not guilty, they've got to admit what they were doing in school, which was not right to begin with. And that could, of course, they come out and everybody knows. And in this day and age, yes, I know, it's very different. It can be very good. But they live in rural California. And their town is still filled with rural people that have unfortunate prejudices. So there's a lot for them to work out and to go through. That's the new one. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I used to live in the Central Valley of California.
For
those not familiar with California, it is not all Los Angeles and San Francisco.
No, no. And I put them east of Riverside, out in the desert.
I know that very well.
Yes, yes. It's kind of Riverside. I lived in Riverside for 4 years. It's Riverside as it would have been about 60, 70 years ago, kind of quiet and desert, the freeway just coming in, that kind of thing.
We're going to take a break here because it's time for Awkward Question of the Week. And what I do is I spin the wheel and you get an awkward question that sometimes are just difficult for us to answer, take us aback, sometimes can be blunt or rude, but they're questions that we frequently get that are sometimes difficult to answer. So are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. Hold on while I spin the wheel here. Okay, yours isn't so tough, but you've almost answered it. But it is one that I guess it is hard for us to answer because you never know. The question is, where do you get your ideas?
Oh my. When I started writing, there was, among many things, there was nobody getting even for gay people. Nobody. For me, writing mysteries, part of it is getting even. Part of it's telling a good story, of course. But like I'm working on my third book while I'm working on the new Shane Corey book. I'm also working on the third book in the Mike King Gay Private Eye series. And it was going to be about Illinois politics. Well, I don't have to do a thing. I just open the newspaper every day. And there it is. Oh, and if you're a politician working in the current White House and you happen to be gay and there are occasional news stories about them, you don't want to be in my next book. Or in Ring of Silence, the last Paul Turner book. I'm still working on the new one. Only 75,000 words done on that. But in the one before this, Ring of Silence, we've all seen the video of the Chicago cop murdering that kid in the streets. So I said, wait a minute, my cops are good guys. I'm only giving away the first two pages here. Mm-hmm. So they're walking towards where I've imagined a cop starting to do the same thing. They get there 10 seconds before. And of course, my guys are good cops. And so Paul Turner, for various plot purposes, he has a taser in his hands. He doesn't think, he tases the cop to, of course, stop the shooting. And then Fenwick, his partner, his straight partner on the police force, tackles the kid, so he saves the kid. Fenwick gets shot, just wounded. And he saves it. So in two pages, I've twisted around. But in Chicago and in most police departments, we know there's a blue wall of silence. And they acted on the side of right. And so, you know, that makes it tough with many people in the department. There's a lot of people that don't like that. So in the one I'm working on, now people in the community recognize them. Some people in the community, when they go out to investigate. And the people in the community, these are the hero kind of cops they want. Somebody who's going to do right at a crisis moment. I'm afraid that's a very long answer to your question.
No.
But, where do I get my... So the idea is, many, many times, simply from the newspapers, who I'm getting even with. It's true about administrators, what we said in the opening there. Oh, my, yes. You don't want to be a school administrator in my books. Oh, no.
I don't know many teachers that enjoy their administrators. I don't have to tell you that the 90s, the world was a much different place in gay society. But have you ever experienced prejudice because of your books?
Well, there's a couple of things. They're a little bit long story, and I've tried to cut them down. The first one... Every year, school year, at the end of the year, the last day of the year, I would have the kids write an evaluation. And in the evaluation, I would promise them I would not read it till After the school year was over, and I always kept faith with my students. And they could write anything they want. Of course, they were eighth graders, so the question always came up, can we use swears? There are certain things that are important to eighth graders. Who knows why? And so, of course, I would say, I can't possibly give you permission. I'm a teacher. But again, I'm not reading them till after the school year closes, and I've never called anybody's parents. One year, one kid persisted, and another student said, yes, you can use them. Shut up. Okay, fine. So one year, the second year after the first book came out, little Brandon, probably the smallest kid in the class that year, he wrote in his evaluation, and they can evaluate anybody, the other students, teachers, whoever they want to do. They can say good things, bad things, whatever. So, okay, Brandon, 2 years after the books came out, he wrote, in part, I know Mr. Zubrow is gay. I know because of the books he writes. He writes books with characters that are gay. I think what my dad said was right. What should happen to gay people? A bullet hole in the head. Wow. And we wonder where the Pulse nightclub shooter, where anybody who wants to do crazy things, is that where it starts, with their parent? Every day I used to walk to the store to get the newspapers, every day. So one Saturday morning, again a couple of years after the books came out, I got to get the timeline right here. It was 20 years after the books came out, but 2 years after incidents happened in my parking lot here to my car, every few months I would get a flat tire with a nail in the tire. But I asked the guy when I was replacing, I said, could this be sabotage? Oh, no, you drove through some construction site. Well, no, I hadn't driven through. Maybe. So things happened. One year, my car was moved. I had a small compact. So it was a number of people, obviously. And my windshield was smashed. Well, I never put it together. I guess I'm just, they were months apart. Well, 20 years later, I walked to the store. And the Saturday morning, there was a woman there, and she's, oh, you're Mr. Zubrow. I see former students, and 20 years ago, 30 years ago, I don't remember. So I asked her name, and she told me. And that was sad. And then the next morning, she was there again. I thought, this is a little odd. Since she followed me out of the store, and she said, I've always wanted to apologize to you. I knew the boys who were doing all that damage to your car all those years ago. I didn't think it was right. I felt bad at the time. I just wanted to apologize. She was at least kind enough to apologize. So I guess that's something.
That, yeah, it certainly is.
Yeah,
I would especially think, being an English teacher, I know teachers today that don't share with their students that they write LGBTQ books. And you were featured in Chicago newspapers. There was no hiding what you did.
No. That all started the day my editor called me and said, we'd like to offer you a contract. So that was in 1988. And there was an immense debate. Well, it wasn't really a debate. Every single person I knew, my parents, my best friend, my younger brother, everybody said, you should not use your real name. And my mother said it before she even knew that there were gay characters in the books. Thanks, Mom. But I got mad because this is something I'm so proud of. I mean, this is a major New York publisher. This is real stuff. This is a real book I've really written, and I'm really going to get it really published. A dream. It's the closest I'll ever come to winning the lottery. And they didn't want to put my name on it. So I got mad. I said, not only is it going to be Mark Zubrow, this is why Mark Richard Zubrow is on all the St. Martin's mysteries. Because I was angry when it was suggested that somehow I should be ashamed. But of course, as you rightly, asked, yeah, there are consequences. There were consequences for that. Danger in the parking lot. Brandon in his letter. Oh, well, there were only two letters written to the superintendent. One woman was mad because a teacher was using these kind of characters. As if then, okay, all of us now, writers, so if you're a plumber, you can only have those kinds of characters. And if you're an electrician, you can only have those kinds of characters. Just nutsy stuff. And, oh, the other fella was something. Oh, I don't remember exactly. I was going to somehow, you know, the usual nonsense, convert them or, and my superintendent, who, I don't know, either had a gay person in his family or he was just a good guy, wrote back to both of them. To the woman, that's no business of ours. I'm summarizing here. And to the man, Mr. Zubro doesn't talk about his private life in school. And that's true. If I talked about my private life, my classes would have been even more boring. Because I pride my, people say, go with your strength. Well, I've learned over these many years, one of my strengths is being boring. Kids would complain, Mr. Zubro, this is boring. And I'd say, but you see, that's what I'm good at. And they say, what do you do when you get home? I said, I read books and I write books. Sometimes I write books, then I read books. It doesn't change. And that's unfortunately still quite true. Or fortunately, because I've got all these books written.
There you go. You remind me a lot of myself and my husband when we see somebody talk about the gay agenda. And we're like, our agenda is we come home from work and we watch TV and we make dinner and go to bed.
That's does an agenda count? I'd like to meet the third baseman of the Cubs and sit down and chat and maybe do a little more than chat after that. Well, that might be an agenda, but that's really more of a fantasy, I think.
Absolutely. You're correct there. What changes have you seen in gay novels, specifically in crime novels, since you started?
Oh, it much better. It much more diverse. Trans mysteries. And it was a woman from Ohio who came to an event at the Gay Center in Chicago. And it was 10 years. I don't do events very much in one night. I have trouble remembering. Her book was good, I remember. The main character was a trans person who owned a hair salon. It was good. And there's just more diverse. Of course, there's all those Michael Nava novels that are superb. Ellen Hart. Fabulous, fabulous writing. She won was honored with the Lifetime Achievement Award by the Mystery Writers of America. Ooh, her books are good. Catherine Forrest, too. Ooh, just so much more. Diversity is the right word to enjoy. And they're so good. Oh, Ellen's are just top. And so are Catherine's. Just good stuff. My highest rating for a book is run, do not walk to your nearest bookstore and buy this book. Ellen's meet that. Catherine's, Michael Nava's, he just has written a new one for the first time in a long time. There's a lot of good, Michael Kraft, just a lot of good stuff.
But one thing I'm curious about is you wrote a gay science fiction trilogy.
Yes.
I'm intrigued by that.
Yeah. Oh, I love that trilogy. I know I'm prejudiced. It's the best gay sci-fi trilogy out there. I'm sorry. I'm bragging, I know. And I know I was taught to be humble. And I wrote the third book first. There's a guy I was dating in the early 80s. He and I were out on Halloween, and he commented, gosh, if Earthlings came to Earth today, and we were walking up and down the streets of Boys Town in Chicago, they're changing that name soon. Good thing. We were walking up and down the streets. He made the crack. No one would believe an alien came because everybody was so dressed so differently and oddly and spectacularly. So I thought, what if an alien came to Earth? and he was gay and was chasing an evil criminal. This is literally how it worked, came to me. And the alien chasing the evil criminal alien, he was an incompetent cop, so he got sent to the most dead zone part of the known universe, of the galaxy, excuse me. And so they meet. And my main character is a waiter in Chicago. And it just, they meet and they fall in love, of course. And there's 270,000 pages later, I can't possibly tell you the end, true love and high adventure for 270 pages. Oh my, dangers abound, evil criminals, true love forever. Yep, Alien Danger is the title for the whole thing. And it starts with, the last one is Alien Victory, Alien Home. Yes, thank you for asking. I do love those.
Well, they sound like a lot of fun.
Yeah, the best review I had, probably ever, the guy, I don't remember his name, I used it for ads. He wrote, and in part he wrote, "I'm not fond of science fiction." Again, I'm not quoting, but go buy this book. He said it's that good. So I was very happy about that.
So you kind of already answered this question, because I think you said you have three books coming out, but what can we expect next from Mark Zubrow?
Well, see, that's the problem. A couple of years ago, I just said, oh, let your imagination run wild. Well, so I've got the new Shane Corey. That's about 5,000 words done. The new Paul Turner, 75,000 words done. I've got to do some revision in terms of current events, and that's going to take a little while. And then the new Mike King, I've got three openings written for that, about 10,000 words. Two of the openings go well together. One does not. Unfortunately, the one that doesn't go well together is the one I'm most fond of. And it's politicians, and it's anti-gay politicians, and it's the atmosphere of criminality coming out of the White House. So 10,000 words. So that's well started. And then, did I start a fourth? No, I write notes for things. I know I've got notes for a new baseball player, teacher one, but I don't have an imagination for that right now. But those other three, yeah, and I don't know which one I'm going to get done first. The poor Paul Turner book has been sitting there for a year and a half, just waiting for 5,000-10,000 more words. But the Shane Corey thing came to me so clear. And the Mike King, the Private Eye. Oh, all the politicians. There's just so many suspects and people to mow down. One of those things. So yes, that's what I'm working on, trying to get something done.
You're juggling a lot of balls.
Yeah, not as many as I'd like, but that's another story.
Well, Mark, I really appreciate you accepting my offer to be on the show, and thank you very much.
Thank you again for having me.
It's my pleasure. Hit the subscribe button wherever you hear our show so you don't miss a single episode. Tell a friend too. Thank you for listening.